What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
There is a lot of fast-moving things going on around this country, and Ron Fauché's got his finger on the pulse, polling a number of different issues. Political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. You can find it at lunchtimepolitics.com. Ron Fauché joins us. Ron, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Noel. Happy to be back.
Ron, there's a couple of things that Democrats are saying out there, and I'm curious your thoughts about whether or not they're gaining any traction. One, constitutional crisis. We have a constitutional crisis. You polled, one of the polling groups polled this Trump and the Constitution by asking how many of the executive orders issued by Donald Trump in his second term so far have been constitutional. And they break out almost evenly amongst all of them, most of them, some of them,
right,
a few of them, none of them. Interesting outcome.
Well, we're seeing that in polling right now on almost everything. Almost everything is 50-50. Now, when I say 50-50, it might be 51-49 or 52-48 or 35-34, but when voters are splitting, they're splitting almost evenly in half. And I think that's where things are right now. You know, when you look at the president's job rating, the last Lunchline Politics report we put out had his rating average at 49. Today, his average was up to 52. So even though there might have been a sense that he's got growing problems that he's dealing with, the American people are at least roughly the same percentage that voted for him are still with him, and that's kind of where it is right now. And you look at almost all of these issues, and they tend to break like that.
How much of an influence is DOGE going to have, the Department of Governmental Efficiency? I think my view is that as this progresses and Republicans are bringing the receipts, not just talking about it, actually, as the White House press spokesman presented the other day at the press conference, actually showed documents supporting what they were saying, that these certain dollars were set aside and this and that and this, executive order or otherwise. I think the public is turned off by a lot of that, meaning what was ultimately finance, and kind of scratching their head saying, why are we doing this? And I think that's going to inure to the favor of Donald Trump and his favorability. Your thoughts?
Well, I agree with that. You know, I mean, I'm one of those people who have been screaming about federal spending and federal debt and deficits for a long time. And it's not just me. There's a lot of people who have. But but it just hasn't been a major issue in American politics. But now, for the first time in a long time, you know, issues related to the size and scope and spending of the federal government are now front and center. And I think that's a good thing. The concern I have is that Musk and the Trump administration are unnecessarily violating rules and laws that they don't need to violate to accomplish what they want to do. For example, you know, when they fired all the inspectors general. Now, inspectors general are the ones who are supposed to be going after waste and fraud and corruption and abuse in agencies. So, you know, if you had a good, strong system of inspectors general, they should be doing and helping that a lot. But to go fire all of these people without looking at the kind of jobs they were doing and do it in a way that was not lawful. You know, the law says you have to send a notice to Congress 30 days in advance before you fire an inspector general. Well, that's not a big problem. That's not any big obstacle. I mean, since they've been talking about it, we've had almost about 30 days pass anyway. So, you know, why not follow those basic rules and laws and do the things right? And I think that's causing unnecessary trouble for the administration. And they need to figure that out pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm kind of scratching my head on that, and I'm wondering whether or not he is trying to create a case that's going to work its way through the courts, because those inspector generals have filed suit, and, you know, whether or not Congress has the authority to limit the authority of the executive branch in some of the basic duties that I guess the Trump administration is saying should be within the purview of the president.
Sure. And, you know, when Congress creates an agency, it seems to me that agency is going to be on the books until Congress passes a law eliminating it, because, it, you know, the law is passed by Congress in Washington. It's passed by the legislature in Louisiana, and legislative acts is the, you know, laws is the expression of legislative will. But so clearly Congress and is going to have a role in a lot of this, and it should have a role in a lot of this. I can understand the impatience of getting into this and just getting it done and not worrying about the rules. It's sort of like it's easier to, you know, instead of asking permission, just say, well, I'm sorry, when it's over with, and get the penance at that point. But basically, I think what's happening is, and the Democrats are making a big mistake here, is that instead of them embracing the idea that, yes, government may have waste, may have abuse, may have all of these things that isn't right, and this is the way it needs to be done, but they're not doing that. They're opposing it across the board in a way that makes them look like they're defending the status quo.
Because they in many cases, and I don't know if I'm going to say this right, they can only survive in the status quo, though, right? I mean, they've created this huge bureaucracy over the years, and they really can't survive if this bureaucracy is right-sized and is cut back and they're not involved in all of these ideological pathways and programs that they're funding and financing. It's a quid pro quo system that without that, without the avenues and everything else, they don't have the power any longer, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat sitting in the executive branch, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, politics is often a fight between change in the status quo, and I think we're really seeing it here. The concern I have is that oftentimes neither side goes about it the right way.
Yeah.
And Trump goes too far in a lot of things that he's doing, even though he might be trying to solve a legitimate problem. And the Democrats go too far in opposing anything that would alter the status quo. And you know, Democrats talk about, well, we need better messaging, better political tactics, and we need to go on podcasts. That's how we win elections. No, that's not how they're going to win elections. They're going to win elections by standing up and saying, we're the party of government activism, and so we have to make sure that government is efficient. It's effective. It performs. It works well. And we're going to do whatever we can to make it work well. And they're not doing that, you know, so they're missing the boat on all of these things. And it's more fundamental than just political tactics.
You know, it's interesting is you have those that are kind of doing the same thing early onset of the last Trump administration. You know, we need to get in their face. You know, they show up at the Department of Education. They're getting in the face of a security person. I don't think the optics of that looked very good. But one thing that has changed is that a lot of folks are getting right back in their face, which did not happen the first time around. And so they're not going to sit back on the defensive. They're going to go on the offensive as well. And it seems as though we're going down a path for a lot of conflict.
We are. And I think the difference is when he was first president, Trump did not have much of a reform agenda. You know, he changed things. He had different attitudes in his approach, but he wasn't really trying to reform government. And we didn't really see much reform go on then. Even though he talked about clearing the swamp and all that, that didn't really happen. But now I think he is fixed on reforming government. And the question is, are they going to just go too far and make it too difficult to get it done? Because ultimately, you know, are these Republican congressmen are going to vote against spending that goes to their districts and goes to their constituencies? And they have to be girded up and ready to go to do something like that. And if there's too much problem surrounding it, it's going to be harder to do that. And then ultimately, you know, will it work? The thing that they're not looking at right now is, you know, what will each government agency look like after we reform it, after we cut it, after we streamline it? And are they going to streamline it? You know, in some cases, it's better just to go ahead and eliminate an agency than to cripple it. You know, there's no reason to go cripple any government agency so it can't operate. You know, if an agency is that bad, eliminate it, get rid of it. But don't cripple it. Don't put more money after bad. So there's a lot of lessons I think they have to learn here. And one thing that Musk has to realize, and he had a quote today that indicated he may realize it, is that unlike business, when if your business is doing, part of your business isn't working, you know, as the CEO, you can go in and eliminate it. But in government, you can go in and eliminate something, or you can go in and cut something, and 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, it slowly comes back, you know. So you have to end up with not just cuts and changes. You have to end up with a government that works better and can accomplish more things for less money. And we still have to see if that's where this is going, because that what I just said isn't easy to do with the behemoth that we're dealing with here.
Yeah, it's interesting because the other approach is to say that this DOGE effort, Department of Governmental Efficiency, led by Elon Musk, an unelected individual, right? is going about doing this? Well, when you think about all of the branches within the executive branch, all of the departments within the executive branch of government, there's really only two people in the executive branch that are elected, the president and the vice president.
Right.
It's a little disingenuous to say that I'm going to have somebody that has to be elected come in and find governmental inefficiency and root it out.
You're right. And I've always thought it would be a good idea for every government, city government, parish government, state government, federal government, you know, to be constantly reviewing how their programs and agencies are working. And a good way to do that is to get people who have been business executives, who have run government agencies, and have them go into each agency and say, how do you think it's working? What do you think we can do to improve it? Let's work with the people who are there to make the changes necessary to do it. And to have people come in from the outside and look at it. And that's the advantage of having somebody like Musk. The problem with Musk is he's the richest man in the world, apparently, at least on paper. And he's got business conflicts, you know, coming out of his ears in terms of dealing with a lot of this. So will that, in the end, deprive his effort of the credibility that it needs to live on?
But, you know, I would propose, think about almost anyone that's got a significant presence in the business world today, both nationally and internationally. And I dare say that you're going to find one that does not have a potential conflict with the U.S. government. Because what we're finding out, right, is the breadth and depth of the tentacles of the U.S. government are probably far greater than any of us ever imagined.
No, there's no question about it. But the concern, I think, is that not only is Musk doing business with the federal government, but he's doing a lot of business with the federal government. And it's not just, well, you know, he pays taxes and he's got to live under OSHA rules or these rules or those rules, and all those are promulgated by the government. He's sort of in the middle of it. And that can be concerning. And it's concerning not necessarily because he is doing anything illegal or will. I don't know whether he is or not. It's concerning because it can hurt the credibility of a reform effort to make government work better. And if that effort doesn't have long-term credibility, it's not going to live long-term.
I think the other day he canceled his participation in a program that would have been a conflict, and he took Tesla out of that program. Now, I don't know that he's going to be willing to do that throughout. I mean, you know, a lot of times you're not even aware that there's a conflict, you know, presented sometimes.
That's right. And you know, and under the law, and lawyers will tell you this, you know, you can sort of make anything a conflict. You know, all of us are taxpayers, and so to that extent, all of us have a conflict in terms of government tax policy, you know, and anybody who's living under government rules has an interest in those rules. So you're right. You can clearly go too far, but it is concerning that because you see this is, you know, cutting, my point here is cutting government isn't something you do in 5 minutes and then it's all over with and you look back and say, okay, we cut it. It's something that you have to build on over time. You have to make sure that after you do the cuts and the changes that things are working right. And to do that, you've got to have a lot of credibility with the public, because if the public isn't demanding this and putting pressure on the politicians, they'll never do it. You know, Jimmy Carter and Al Gore both wanted to restructure and reorganize government to make it work better and to save money. And the problem they had is, as Democrats, they ran headlong into public employee unions, and there was just so much they could do politically. And so their efforts just kind of went away over time. And so if you want something to really work, it needs to be, based on some sense of legitimacy that we know what we're doing. And we're going to have a government when it's all over with that's smaller and cheaper, but works better. And those are hard standards.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, whatever cuts you make have to make operational sense. But by the same token, the bureaucratic pushback and the friction points, there are just so many of them.
Absolutely.
In the federal government.
Absolutely.
System. The shock and awe approach that they've taken,
right,
is, I think, we want to stay on the offense and stay out in front of them and have them react to us as opposed to us reacting to them. They may run violative of the law, or civil service or whatever it may be in the interim. And it's going to be interesting as to how long they can keep this pace up and going, where they're reacting to the administration as opposed to the flip side. Interesting
right.
approach.
Right.
They've pushed a lot of hot topic buttons in a very short period of time. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Stay with us.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge. Trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees.
Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
There are a couple of big ticket programs in the federal government. And if anyone is thinking about the possibility of balancing the budget, it is going to require re-engineering of some of these big ticket budget items. And one of them would be Social Security. Ron, they polled Social Security, and it breaks down this way. Social Security should be given more funding, 69% in favor of that. Social Security should be given the same funding as it now has, 20%. Social Security be given less, 3%. And Social Security should be eliminated, 2%. So when you're facing the favorability of Social Security like this, it's going to be hard for the Trump administration, really, and Congress to go in and tweak these things. They, you know, Congress, for the most part, is incredibly unpopular. If they go tweaking on Social Security, they may hit record low numbers.
Well, Social Security is something that, you know, as those numbers showed, you've got almost 90% of the electorate nationwide who think Social Security should have either the same funding as it has now or more. And only 3% think it should have less, and 2% think it should be eliminated. So, I mean, voters are overwhelming in support of Social Security. And anybody who tries to cut it, it very well could, end their political careers, to be honest with you. You know, and the same thing about Medicare. Medicare isn't quite as high, but it still has 87%. Support current funding or more funding for Medicare. So those two things are very difficult. Now I think the American people can understand, you know, what you refer to as tweaking, you know, maybe cleaning up some things, streamlining it, saving money, in some places, and that might work. But overall, Social Security and Medicare are going to be very, very tough for anybody to deal with.
But, you know, if you pose the question this way, with identifying and quantifying the dollars that DOGE finds, right? I guarantee you would end up with similar numbers saying, well, if the Social Security Trust Fund's in trouble and is going to go bankrupt in so many different years, whatever you find over there with DOGE, transfer those dollars over here to Social Security and don't touch it. That's where I would be.
That's where I think a lot of people would be. Absolutely.
I mean, I don't want to finance a production in South America. I don't want to do, you know, a lot of other of these things that we're uncovering that we're spending millions upon millions upon millions of dollars for. I mentioned yesterday we have NGOs that are 100% funded by the federal government.
Right.
And they're beginning to reveal themselves that nobody had any idea that without federal funding, this whole not-for-profit would go away.
Well, it's not an NGO anymore. It's a government agency at that point. And
exactly.
You know, we see a lot of that, too, in universities. The difference between public and private universities has really been minimized. I mean, you've got private universities who are getting an enormous amount of federal money for a variety of things, and as you've got state universities doing it, and you know, and at what point do all of these agencies that are living off of federal dollars, how long can that exist? How long can that keep going? But you see, the problem is, you know, Congress passes laws and programs all the time. But how many times do they go back and look at whether something they passed 5 years ago or 10 years ago is working properly? Almost never, you see. So So that's something that the government needs to do. It needs to look at what have we done, and is it working right? Is it needed? You know, some programs and some agencies legitimately need more money to do what they have to do, while other agencies and programs shouldn't even exist. You know, and then you've got a situation like the Department of Education, and people are saying, well, if you eliminate the Department of Education, you're eliminating education. Well, that's not true. There's a difference between education and a federal agency that's named education. But the question there is, if you get rid of the Department of Education, you know, are some of the functions going into other agencies? And the big question is, will the federal government take the money that states and local school systems are getting and just give it to them directly, as opposed to give it to them through a through an education department? You know, so there's a lot of things that have to be resolved here. And of course, right now, the battle has become very personalized. It's become very partisan, very political. And that's the last thing it should be.
MIT, one of the richest universities in the country, is talking about asking for their departments to reduce their dependence on central funding by 5 to 10%. That's pretty telling. This is in advance of not of even knowing what the cut would be, right?
So,
I mean, that tells you that their financing by the federal government might be greater than 10% of their budget.
Right, exactly. So, well, I think it's clearly greater. You know, I believe the last numbers I saw on the state of Louisiana's budget, it's about half of it comes from the federal government. You know, so the question is, should the government just take this money and dole it back to state and federal, state and local agencies or universities or whatever, or should they do it and then administer it through a government agency? Now, that's a legitimate issue. You know, the whole idea of matching funding, where you have programs that, like highway programs, where it's 90% federal, 10% local, 50% federal, 50% local, you know, how wise is that? Should the federal government just be paying all of it? You know, should the states be paying all of it? And if they do, will the federal government give them the money to do that? I mean, there's a lot of issues here that that never will be settled completely.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, as you look at Medicaid, for example, let's talk about that briefly. In that polling, 53% say it should be given more funding, 28% same funding, less funding is 7 and eliminated is 3. You have almost very similar numbers to Medicare. But a poor state like Louisiana, if we have to face significant Medicaid cuts, we're in trouble.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Medicaid has become, for most state governments, if not all of them together, the biggest budget item in each state. You know, so it's an enormous issue for state governments, as it is for the federal government. I don't hear people talking about that right now. We'll see. Like you said, Medicaid, which is in effect federal funding for people, you know, who can't meet certain income levels, as opposed to Medicare, which is federal funding for health care for people over 65. And of course, Medicaid is less popular because most people don't get Medicaid, you see. So, but even still, 81% think the funding of Medicaid should stay the same or be increased.
Yep. You know, I don't know how they're going to dice this up, but there's a lot of political risk for a lot of different folks. There's a lot of chatter out there about what is going to be proposed and otherwise, but I'm not sure that we're going to see a lot of execution on that chatter, right?
Well, that's the thing, and And you know, I guess the point I'm trying to make here is again, you know, this isn't something you do in 5 minutes. It's something that is a process that's going to take a long time to work out. And I'm in favor of a process that makes government smaller and leaner and less expensive and more productive. And I think most Americans are. But that's something that everybody has to work with. You know, there should be members of Congress right now going into these agencies and mm-hmm. sort of doing the same thing that Musk's people are doing. You know, saying we're going to meet every week and we want to look at all the numbers and see how this thing is structured and see if we want to keep funding it. Because no matter what they say in terms of cutting, when the 12 appropriations bills come out, if they don't cut anything, if they keep funding at the same levels, then most of it is for naught.
Yep, for sure. As always, we appreciate your time, your insight. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ron, and have a great weekend. You can find his publication at lunchtimepolitics.com. Welcome back, folks. Those Dawn Busters, Kiwanis Club of Metairie, they're at it again and here to tell us about a celebration that's going to go on tomorrow at Lafreniere Park is Trip Rabelais, director of Lafreniere Park. Trip, welcome to the show.
Thank you, as always, for having me, Noel. I appreciate it.
So what do we have going on? We're celebrating 200 years, the bicentennial of Jefferson Parish. And so what's happening tomorrow?
We thought a great way to celebrate the bicentennial of Jefferson Parish and to kick off Mardi Gras would be to put a 200-foot king cake around the carousel at the park, you know, because we haven't done that yet, so why not do it?
In typical Dawn Buster Kiwanis Club fashion, right?
Yeah, go big or go home, you know? Why not give it a shot? And we have to thank you. We're at your house, of course, baking today, so we appreciate you guys letting us in.
And the king cake is being prepared by talented chefs and members of the American Culinary Federation of New Orleans, led by Ron Lafrait, owner of the Gumbo Shop and a recognized culinary figure here in this area.
We were so lucky to get them to come to help us. It was just such a wonderful thing. I think everybody recognizes that the bicentennial of Jefferson Parish is a really big deal, and we're just going to continue with these things. But this weekend, you bring the kids over tomorrow. It starts at 11. You get free carousel rides. It's $5 to cover the spacewalks and things we've got out there. But it's just a great family event once again at Lafreniere Park.
And there's going to be some booths out there, some local vendor booths. And are they selling items or what are they doing?
They're selling their wares, yeah. I, in all honesty, I don't know exactly who's coming, but they've got a lot of vendors coming to, you know, I'm sure with Mardi Gras things, wreaths, things like that, to just make the celebration even better. We're really just very fortunate to have the Dawn Busters as a part of Lafreniere. They just help us promote the park all the time. And you guys are always so generous to us to help us get the word out. So we just want to invite everybody over again tomorrow to come celebrate Mardi Gras and the 200th anniversary of Jefferson Parish.
Spacewalks, carousel, a lot of piece of king cake, a 200-foot king cake. Never seen one of those that large. And all kinds of other festivities and things to do, and the cost is just $5. So if you're looking for a great thing to do with your kids tomorrow, can't think of a better place to go than Lafreniere Park, right?
That's right. And don't forget, Jefferson Parish has declared itself the king cake capital of the world. We have more bakeries making king cakes than anywhere else. And the only king cake we're aware of that's bigger than this one is the one they put around the Superdome. So this is the biggest one ever in Jefferson Parish.
All right. So quite an accomplishment there. And we thank you all for allowing us to spread the word for you. If you're looking for something to do, get out there at 11 a.m. Y'all hope to wrap up this at what time?
You know, it's kind of one of those things that when the king cake runs out, it runs out. And, you know, we'll shut everything down at 2:00 if it's not done. But, I it just depends on how fast people come out. I anticipate with the weather tomorrow being nice and warm, I would think we're going to see a lot of people, and we're going to have a lot of people there early. So come out early, have a good time, come enjoy Lafreniere Park. That's what we always want everybody to come do.
Absolutely. Trip Rabelais, director of Lavernier Park, best of luck tomorrow on the celebration, 200 years, bicentennial of Jefferson Parish and the beginning of Mardi Gras. I can't believe it begins already. Does Little Rascals form around you guys somewhere out there or no?
No, it doesn't form over by us. No, that was years and years ago. They used to line some up, but that's long gone. We don't have any Mardi Gras celebration other than this one.
Right. Okay. 11 a.m. tomorrow, Lafreniere Park. Best of luck tomorrow. Trip Rabelais, director of Lafreniere Park. Have a great day.
Thank you, as always.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. We'll check in with Scoot when we return. 504-260-1870 on the Talk and Text line. Stay with us. Scoot's here, and he's ready to be your Valentine. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
You know, I'm going to talk about this on the show. You know, I went to an all-boys school, and, you know, I guess until about the seventh grade, we were told to give each other Valentine's cards. Like, we gave boys Valentine's cards. Be my Valentine to, like, another guy in the class. I mean, I gave them to a bunch of friends. It's a wonder that we, you know, don't have problems with gender. I mean, I don't. Anyway.
Scoot, I heard of a new concept called Galentine. Have you heard of that?
No. What is that?
Where the gals get together.
Oh, I like that. Is there video?
I don't know. Galentine gone wild. I don't know.
All right. I'm okay with that. So, yeah, we'll talk about perfume and cologne. We're at perfume headquarters today at 2034 Woodmere, just off LaPalco behind Fort of Harvey. And it's just really like just the best deals. If you need a Valentine's gift, this is the place to go. And, you know, in the past, I featured some of the worst Valentine songs, the worst love songs ever. We're going to feature some of the greatest love songs ever on the show, with a couple of bad ones kind of thrown in there. And it's free for all Friday, so we have no idea where the show's going to go, but we're going to have fun this afternoon from Perfume Headquarters.
Sounds like it. Got a great lineup coming your way. Stay tuned for Scoot. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday morning.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.